Hi, listeners. Stories have so much power, and so does whoever controls the narrative. It is time that we dissect and analyze these stories. I am Vipul, and this is Woke Tales. This week's episode comes before the National Beef Burger Day, which is May 28th. So I bring you a story about cows, lilies, human attachment to animals, but also entitlement to other species. But before I tell you the story, I want to welcome our guests, who will dissect and analyze the story with me. Hi, Peter, and hi, Dorian. Welcome to Woke Tales.
Hi, hello. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you. It's lovely to be here.
Peter and Dorian, they have their own podcast. It's called Try Trial Again, where they critically analyze trials to reach a verdict with the help of a jury. So I'm assuming analyzing the story and probably extrapolating this will be relatively easy.
Well, it's generous of you to say that we have a jury since we have one guest every week, but that guest is our juror, so close enough.
So do y'all want to tell a little bit more structured introduction about your podcast?
So on our podcast, Try Trial Again, we re-argue controversial cases from murder trials to fraud trials and all kinds of other stuff. And every week we have a guest on who serves as our juror. Peter will argue one side of the case. I'll argue the other side. And then our guest gets to give us a verdict. And then after that, we share some surprising, sometimes, information that happened after the trial, some developments that may or may not change our viewers' point of view.
Great. That's really interesting. And Peter, do you want to add something to it?
I'll just add that you've been on the show, and so go find that episode. It should have come out May 11th.
Yes, exactly. So I did my civic duty as a juror. So everyone, go listen to that episode and find out if my verdict was guilty or not guilty. And I just want to add, it was a case involving cattle fraud. And talking of cattle fraud, it's story time. Today's story is How Water Lilies Began. This is a folktale from Wales. It tells how water lilies came to grow in a lake in Welsh mountains. It was all because of Hughes, a farmer's son who loved to play the harp and never went to school. Hughes lived with his mother in a humble cottage by the side of a mountain. Every morning, he drove his mother's black and white cows up the mountain, where they spent the day in a meadow by the side of the lake. One day, Hughes took his harp and played a few chords as he watched over the herd. To his astonishment, six silver cows rose out of water, drawn by the music. Their coats gleamed in the sunlight as they gathered around Hughes and listened to him play. They stayed with the herd all day, following the rest of the cows back to the farm that evening. Hugh's mother felt very fortunate to have such fine new cows. She boasted to her neighbors that they gave twice as much milk as the black and white ones. And she added, the milk was of exceptional quality. All went well until one of the silver cows stopped giving milk. After waiting a few days, Hugh's mother told the butcher to come the next day and take the cow away. Hugh pleaded with his mother to spare the animal, but she wouldn't relent. She told Hughes they couldn't afford to have even one cow eating grass and giving nothing in return. The boy knew how obstinate his mother could be once her mind was made up, but he argued with her for as long as he dared. When his mother told him to be quiet, he knew he had no choice but to submit to her will. The next morning, as he trudged up the mountain, Hughes could think of nothing but the beautiful silver cow that was going to be sold. The music he played on his harp that day became increasingly melancholy until at last his eyes filled with tears. He could play no more. He stood up and threw his harp into the lake. At once, a strange thing happened. The six silver cows ran to the edge of the lake and plunged in. They were never seen again. Soon, masses of silver water lilies began to grow all along the fringes of the lake where the silver cows had jumped in, and they still grow there today. So Peter and Dorian, before we jump into the discussion, tell me your thoughts about the story, what you liked, what you didn't like.
Well, Hughes's story is suspicious to me.
Why?
A kid goes out to the pasture or whatever and comes back with 6 silver cows that produce twice as much milk as the other cows. I don't know. It sounds like theft. Because, you know, he's got the harp story, but we don't have any evidence that he's that good at playing the harp. There's nothing in this tale about him doing a recital and being the toast of the village. So sounds to me like he just rustled those cattle from a neighboring farm, showed up with them one day, and the rest is history.
It sounds to me, Dorian, you've got that cattle fraud case on your mind.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say, I actually did a small little dive into this, I almost said case, into this fairy tale. And I think it's interesting, there were a couple of versions. One that said that the boy's harp playing was lauded by the town.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that he was well known for his musical talents. One tale that said, or one version rather, that said the father was the mean one and not the mother. And then one of those versions also said that all 6 of the cows stopped producing milk, which I think kind of changes the story a bit.
Peter, I'm glad you did some research, and obviously some versions of the story do establish Hugh to have the musical talent, so Dorian as a juror can acquit Hugh from cattle theft. Also, it is interesting how some versions have the father and some versions have the mother as the quote-unquote villain of the story.
I think it's on an individual version-by-version basis. In the version that you gave us, it is the mom who is, I guess, in, for lack of a better term, the aggressor, the one creating conflict in this story. And they just need someone to create some conflict in the story.
True. So when the mother in the story talks about taking cow to the butcher, I was obviously sad, but it also made me think about beef farming as a bigger picture. However, before we get into that, I want to ask about your dietary habits. Do y'all eat meat, or y'all vegetarians or vegans?
So I've been a vegetarian since I was 5 years old, so not that I'm going to say my age on this, but it's been over 20 years.
Yeah, you're.
And Peter and I are not alike in that sense, because I do eat meat.
So Peter, what happened when you were 5 that made you vegetarian?
I did it voluntarily. It was because my older sister also decided to become vegetarian at that same time. And I followed suit because I looked up to her. I still do. I still look up to her. And I wasn't eating much meat at the time. I think the only meat that I was consistently eating, much to my mom's chagrin, was bacon. So for me, it wasn't a massive dietary change when I went vegetarian. Plus, my dad is also vegetarian, so my mom was prepared to just make a little extra vegetarian food for me and my sister.
I will also add that I am a newly turned vegetarian. It's been a little over a year, so I guess it can still new, you know, compared to Peter.
During the pandemic, okay.
Sure, yeah.
Yes, growing up, my diet primarily was vegetarian, so it wasn't a drastic change. However, I know people, if they have eaten meat all their life and then they want to turn vegetarian, their body kind of takes time to get used to it. And, you know, it's a little bit harder for them.
Dorian, have you ever tried going vegetarian for a week?
No, I'm not interested. But I will say that Peter makes some delicious vegetarian dishes.
Why, thank you. I try. I have practice.
Yeah.
It's funny how, Dorian, you clearly say you are not interested. So.
Because
I used to be like that. I wasn't interested. But then at some point, I thought that I should stop eating meat and be a vegetarian, and would take that resolution every year and miserably fail. So what I did was I gradually decreased my consumption of meat. And last year, 2020, I stuck to my resolution and completely cut it off. after, I guess, my 10th try, 10 mm-hmm. years in a row.
Well done.
Yeah, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. So I'm also, I would just want to say that in no way I'm trying to push any kind of agenda on anyone. I'm just, you know, trying to have a discussion and why people,
you know, you know, what people I think. See you pushing your vegetarian agenda.
No. I think maybe we can, you know, talk about like what drives people. Because one reason for meat in a diet is the nutrition value. But also, I believe the taste is very appealing. Peter, what is your take on that? And also, is it easy going out for meals? So I come
absolutely
from
absolutely not
right. So I come from India, where growing up vegetarian was no big deal. Many people are, and that kind of diet is fine, and you have so many options. Coming to the US, I have to look up for vegetarian restaurants, and usually if there are stuff on the menu, there's one thing.
Peter is a good sport about this. He lets us go to restaurants I want to go to sometimes and gets French fries and or a salad.
Yeah. Most places will have at least a salad, and I love French fries. They are truly one of my favorite. I'm going to call it a dish.
It's a dish. That counts.
Yes, I concur.
They're fantastic. So the food's never been a huge part of my life. And so I don't think I get the same joy and excitement and pleasure out of a delicious meal as some people do. And so it is easy for me to be like, yeah, let's just go to this place because Doreen really wants to get whatever. And I know that they have delicious French fries. And quite honestly, I'm probably there for the wine.
Right. So are you vegetarian, or do you also try to lower your consumption of any animal product like milk or cheese?
I don't limit my cheese, but I also don't drink milk. And the reason I eat cheese is when I went vegan for 4 months, not only did the amount of time it took me to actually prepare food skyrocket, but also my ability to consume enough protein and basic calories plummeted. And so I decided that I was fine eating cheese. I love a good pizza. I love grilled cheese. And so for me, it just made sense to continue to consume cheese. That said, I don't wear too many leather products, but I also know the value of a good pair of boots that probably cost maybe twice as much as a vegan boot, but will last 5 times longer. So sometimes there are cost benefit analyses that I do to make sure I don't burn too many holes in my bank account.
Right. So it is like you said about the cost issue. I feel like going on a healthy diet or a vegetarian diet can be expensive.
Yep.
And there is a certain amount of luxury if you can do that. For example, organic produce, grass-fed beef, or cage-free eggs are more expensive.
It is. There's right. definitely a lot of luxury and privilege being able to buy fresh and organic food. It is absolutely a luxury to be able to make a decision on where you're shopping and that you aren't going to buy this product from this company. You're not going to buy this canned product because you'd rather get it fresh. There's a lot of luxury there. And then also, if we add on to that, there are just so many food deserts. Even here in St. Louis, where we live, there are literal food deserts where people do not have access to a supermarket, let alone a fresh food market.
Right.
Now, there have been a lot of companies who are preparing plant-based products, which can be more expensive. So even if they are available in a grocery store, they can be more expensive than buying a big pack of beef patties. So I will never judge someone because they want to eat something which they like. It tastes good and is cheaper, and that's what they can afford. However, at the risk of sounding a bit preachy, I want to mention 4 points which were instrumental in my decision to embrace vegetarianism. First is human health. Traditionally, research into vegetarianism focused mainly on potential nutritional deficiencies. But in recent years, pendulum has swung the other way, and studies are confirming the health benefits of meat-free eating. Nowadays, plant-based eating is recognized not only as nutritionally sufficient, but also as a way to reduce the risk of many chronic illnesses. Second is environmental health. We use so much land to raise livestock and grow crops to feed animals, so we cut down a lot of forests to do that. For example, deforestation of Amazon to graze cattle and grow enough crops to feed billions of farmed animals. Industrial meat is the biggest cause of deforestation globally, which also leads to climate change, global warming, and decline of biodiversity. Cattle ranching accounts for about 80% of that deforestation. The remaining 20% of Amazon deforestation is attributed to humans cutting down land for timber, palm oil, soybeans to feed livestock, and more. Third is human rights issue. Human rights abuse and land grabbing is at a high, and government is not helping. Indigenous people and traditional communities, like the Garizeira communities in Brazil, are at the front line in the fight to protect forests. It is a modern-day colonization. It is not your land to take. And last, but obviously not the least, is animal ethics. There is cruel treatment of animals. Cows in the last few months of their lives being fattened in feedlots with no access to grass and sometimes no shelter.
So these were the four important issues why I turned vegetarian. And I'm not going to say that I will remain vegetarian forever, because you never know. I have quit my resolution in the past, so I will try as long as I can. But you never know. Sometimes, like, I've had Popeye's chicken sandwich. It was really good.
That is a great sandwich.
Right? I know. I think there was a little debate about the Chick-fil-A and Popeye's. I have my personal opinion about Chick-fil-A, so I was obviously going to support Popeye's. But however, the taste was much better anyway, so it wasn't like a biased decision for me. So
obviously, all these are very important issues. And with extreme caution, Dorian, I'm going to ask you, do any of these points resonate with you?
I don't have a prepared position on this topic, but I am an animal lover as well. So I believe in humane treatment of animals under any circumstances, even when they're being raised ultimately for food. But does it change my mind about eating meat to know that there are problems in the world that need to be addressed? It does not.
Okay. And again, the humane treatment point goes back to the privilege one has.
Yeah, I mean, I'll jump in here. And first, I personally don't think that the fairy tale itself is actually trying to promote vegetarianism or is anti-vegetarianism in any way. But I think overall, there are a lot of ethical issues around how meat is produced, but there are also a lot of ethical issues on how, like, soy was produced for a while, and there are ethical issues on how around bamboo, which everyone loves because it's so sustainable, except if you look how you make it into beautiful fabric, it's not a sustainable product. And so if you dig into how any individual item or product is made, you will find ethical challenges. So I guess I would kind of argue that the fairy tale itself, where the people are trying to produce their own food off of the land, is maybe the most ethical way to do anything. However, it is also one of the most challenging ways and something that can't be done while in an urban environment like the three of us live in.
Right.
Yes, I agree. The story doesn't necessarily promote any dietary habits, but I use the cow and the butcher angle as an opportunity to talk about beef farming and its impact.
Right. And also, what is underneath that water that turned them into lilies?
Well, that's a good question.
Well, I hope you're holding on to something when I tell you.
There is some magical element to the story. It is not a real story. Or maybe it is, you know.
What?
Maybe there was magic at some point, and it's no longer there.
I choose to believe we still have magic. We just need to look for it.
Right. So we need to look by the pond for some flowers or lilies.
Field trip. When this episode comes out, everyone go to Forest Park, look at the blooming lilies.
Or whichever park is near you, and maybe have a picnic while you appreciate the flowers.
Yeah, exactly. That sounds great.
And if you're a harp player, start strumming some notes and see if any lilies turn into silver cows.
Only one way to find out. I also want to touch on the emotional, non-transactional connection and bond Hughes formed with the cows.
one of the things that I took away from this story is the impact having a pet can have on a growing child. I don't know about you guys. I had a childhood dog, and when we had to put that dog down because he was just really sick, I cried for a good day and a half when we had to do that. And I think one thing to take away from this story is the emotional attachments that children can create with an animal, despite the fact that neither one really understands the other, but there is some kind of emotional attachment that two creatures can form.
Yeah, and I actually, you know, just even thinking about situations like these, I get a little emotional. So so I'm not gonna talk too much about it. I don't want to start crying right now, but
it's okay to be vulnerable. This is a safe space.
Right. That is true. I agree that, you know, there is certain kind of bond which you form with an animal, even though we don't speak the same language, there is a way that we can share emotions.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I guess going back to the story and dietary habits, I would encourage everyone to think about their diet, what it includes, what you consume in general. And if you have the means to make a small change, which might not affect you as much, but can initiate a change on a larger scheme of things.
And I will add, a Mediterranean diet is extremely healthy and is related to longevity and heart health. And that does include meat if you want it. It's just in moderation.
And something cheap, healthy, and delicious are kidney beans, which are my favorite, and also lentils and chickpeas. But Peter's point about in moderation can be today's take-home message. So thank you for coming on the show, and hope you enjoyed the story.
This is lovely. Thank you.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell where people can find your podcast?
Yeah, sure. If you want to listen to our podcast, it's called Try Trial Again, and you can find that on Apple Podcasts or pretty much anywhere you get your podcast. And then you can follow us on social media at Try Trial Again.
Great. On that note, bye for now.
Bye.
Bye.
Let me know your thoughts on the story and our discussion by emailing me on woketalespodcast@gmail.com or through social media at woketalespodcast on Instagram and woketalespod on Twitter. And please rate, review, and like Woketales Podcast, and don't forget to subscribe so you can easily access our weekly stories. If you have any story recommendations, or if you want to come dissect and analyze a story with me, give me a shout out on email or social media. Because whatever you do, keep dissecting and keep analyzing.